Morning. It is 10:50. I will call this meeting to order. Angela, will you please take roll?
Chair Downs.
Here.
Vice Chair Boylan. Regent Brooks.
Here.
Regent Gokuchiya.
Yes.
Regent Goodman.
Here.
You do have a quorum.
Thank you. I'll now move to agenda item number one, public comment. For those who would like to call in and offer public comment, please dial 669-444-9171 and enter meeting ID 961-6251-7764 and passcode 555-555. Is there any public comment here in Henderson at NSU?
Dr. Bill Robinson, past chair, UNLV Faculty Senate. Sorry for being here. I wanted to come to the security meeting and the main board meeting, but now I had time in between to pass, and so I wrote you all about my concerns about the parking garage from just a basic standpoint of the student shouldn't be paying, being forced to be guaranteed that kind of a student fee increase. And we know you asked them specifically, Chair Downs, about whether they were going to raise parking fees this past year. And they kind of said no, and then they kind of did it anyhow. I'm concerned about the students having to pay essentially for a garage we need right now because of events at Thomas and Mack and the $36 a year forever increase. I also just want to remind you all that we always do this, that we commit ourselves $62 million over a long period of time that's based on enrollment projections. And we never seem to make the enrollment projections that these things are. We've had two horrible days of employment numbers coming out. We had a report today that shows that employment is as bad, the number of layoffs now this last month is as bad as we've had since 2009, back when we were in the middle of the Great Recession. We are going to have a recession. I think it's pretty obvious. I think that's maybe the plan by some folks is how to get rid of inflation is to make sure we have a nice little recession. At the same time, there's threats to Pell Grants. There's threats to all kinds of federal financial aid. I'm scared to death that we're going to have a huge enrollment crunch in the fall just because of uncertainty, because people don't know, because people don't want to commit now to what's going to happen. We can't be in a position where we've committed a whole bunch of dollars over a whole bunch of period of time on an enrollment that might be for a while weaker than it should be. And so as an economist, I'm just scared about any time we commit money, but I also, I know the students are back in it and the students said it's a good thing, but the student fee increase just bothers me. Thanks.
Thank you. Is there any other public comment here at Nevada State University? Seeing none, SCS, is there any public comment on the phone?
There are no callers for public comment at this time.
Thank you. And we'll move forward with the consent items, the consent agenda. Are there any items that anyone would like to pull off separately, or is there a motion to accept them all?
Regent Briggs, for the record, motion to approve.
Is there a second to the motion?
Second.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. All in favor of approving the consent agenda items, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say nay. The motion passes. Okay. Moving on to item number three, the second quarter fiscal year 2024-2025 fiscal exceptions self-supporting budgets. So I think that's CFO Fatone.
Thanks, Chair Downs. Chris Fatone, NGCFO for the record. Item three on your agenda is the quarterly exception report. This is second quarter fiscal year 25 as of December 31st, 24. This report provides a listing of the programs and project accounts that end the quarter in a fiscal deficit and includes some comments from the institutions regarding their resolution plans for those deficits. The report you've seen before, it's organized in four sections. The first section covers program deficits. That's pages 1 through 7, followed by capital project accounts on page 8 and special project funding accounts on page 9. And then the last section are accounts that have ended in a deficit, but with generally that involve timing differences that should be resolved within the next reporting cycle. I did want to offer, so some of the items on here you've seen before in the first section, referencing specifically the athletics programs, the CSN dental program. I know there was a good presentation just in the last Health Sciences Committee meeting about the collaboration between CSN and UNLV Dental that I think there's certainly hope that'll help in the CSN dental program count specifically. I wanted to mention on the program section, there is one account that we had listed in the timing difference section of the report on page 17, and that's UNR Athletics. I think the initial feedback on that, or the initial information provided on that, suggested timing that it would be appropriate to report in the timing difference section, but you'll also see in one of your other items on the agenda, the quarterly athletics reports, that the UNR Athletics is actually projecting ending the fiscal year in a deficit. So I would, having had those together, I would have included the UNR Athletics program in the first section as well with the, in the program deficit section. So just wanted to highlight that for you. That's on page 17 of the report. Otherwise, I'd pause there and see if you have any questions.
Are there any questions from the board or from the committee?
Yeah.
Okay.
Can we talk further about the $20 million in UNLV Athletics?
You certainly could ask questions on that here, or if you'd like, the next item 4, is the quarterly athletic reports, and I don't know if you...
Shouldn't we discuss that as a fiscal issue right now, or... Would you prefer me to ask it on item 4?
I have no preference.
This probably is most germane to item 4.
Okay.
But I think there's probably a little bit of leeway either way. But if your questions are directly related to athletics, I'd probably suggest asking those during item 4.
Okay. I have one more thing, too. Regarding the medical school, UNLV, I have some concerns about what's going on with the practice plan, and Dean Kahn has facilitated a meeting with the head of the practice plan over there so that I can have conversations and dig deeper into that budget, but I wanted to put on the record that is an issue that we are looking into. Dr. Marcia Turner and I are involved there, so I'm not going to dig into it today on this item, but I wanted to put it on record that we will be doing a deep dive. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions regarding item 3? I did have a question, and I'm trying to see what page it was on, but it was regarding, I think it was that $56 million deficit on the Gateway Center that's covered by other funds, but this is this something we're seeing will start to become less of a negative? I mean, do we have any opinions on any, UNLV, apologize that for that. University Gateway, that it's at the negative $56 million, and then, but it does have the note that it's covered by the self-supporting funds and some other funds.
Good morning, Chair Downs. For the record, David Frommer, UNLV Associate Vice President, Planning, Construction, and Real Estate. So when that property was acquired, it was done as essentially a credit or a deficit against university reserves, as noted. The revenue from that project, which is generally from the residential and commercial leases, is being applied. It's an annual application at the end of the fiscal year of net revenue. So right now, that's trending in the range of about $1.3 million a year in net revenue, and that is going to be the source of repaying that, but it's going to take some time.
Okay. I mean, or do we expect that annual net revenue to increase?
That is our goal. We're trying to maximize the revenue of that property. The commercial market's not great right now, so that's a struggle. The residential occupancy, the last figure I had was 96%, so that's quite good. So our goal is to continue to look for every opportunity to maximize revenue. We had the master lease when the property was acquired, which generated more revenue that ultimately wasn't sustainable for the lessee, so they defaulted. So we are doing everything we can to try to maximize revenue, but it is less revenue than we had anticipated, or it's less than we were getting under the master lease.
Okay, so is that where the discrepancy is, where the master lease had a projected payback in a more reasonable time period than what it looks like now?
Correct. The master lease had a repayment period of about 20 years. That's going to be extended significantly based on the revenue we're receiving from being the direct operator of that property.
Okay. I appreciate it. Thank you.
My pleasure.
Okay. If there are no other questions, move on to item number four. No, it's information only. Item number four, second quarter fiscal year 2024-2025 athletics financial report, UNLV, UNR, CSN, and TMCC. Information only.
Thank you, Chair Downs. Chris Fatone, for the record. The item number four is the second quarter fiscal year 25 quarterly athletics report. And just to note this, we did publish a supplemental posting on this report. We had a revised athletic report from UNR, so we replaced that item to just make sure we're looking at the right version. This report started, this is the second iteration of the quarterly athletics report, and what we're providing to you here is in a common format across the four athletic programs. Report that shows you the quarter-to-date fiscal year actual in addition to a fiscal year projection and that compared to current fiscal year budget and prior year actuals. This is the second quarter. I think in this case you have updates and additional comments provided by each of the institutions. I would note that all four of the athletic programs did end the second quarter in a deficit, and our three of the four are projecting deficits through the end of the fiscal year in varying rates, and they've provided some comments for you on the plans around those, but I would just pause there if there's any questions. I know there's representatives from the campuses here for you.
Other questions from the committee regarding agenda item number four?
Regent Gorkichia for the record, and as I look at these, and any time I see a deficit, and especially when you're talking $20 million or $5 million or whatever, how are we going to recover it? Again, we just heard there seems to be a little downturn. Ticket sales, the shortfall, is it because of, maybe you didn't get to win a game and get the right bowl, to cover the cost. But the bottom line is, again, this is deficit, so it does concern me, and how are we projecting to recover this, or are we going to write it off and pay for it?
Mr. Chair, for the record, Brian.
I'll start over again. Mr. Chair, for the record, Brian Sandoval, President of the University of Nevada, to you and through to Regent Gokachia. In response to his question, and Regent, believe me, I have the same questions as you do, but this is a moment in time. This isn't the final budget. It closes out at the end of the fiscal year, and we are seeing the numbers trending very positively for us. We do have the athletic director and our CFO here to specifically respond to the questions, but personnel costs are going to be less than we thought they were going to be. Ticket sales are going to be more than we thought they would be. There are other matters that again, are trending. I'm not standing here telling you there won't be a deficit at the end of the year, but it will be less than what it is now. So with that, I'll ask perhaps the Athletic Director Remp to come forward, please.
Uh, Good evening, or good afternoon. My name is Stephanie Remp. I'm the athletic director at the University of Nevada, Reno. So I would just repeat basically what President Sandoval said. And so we do have our numbers here. There's some things that were in there at the end of the second quarter that we expect to be changing and trending in the correct direction. So I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I can surely live with that. You're telling me it's going to be less, and that's the right direction at least. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Chris Heavey, officer in charge at UNLV. And as you know, I'm new to this post, and this is definitely one of my top priorities is to get our arms around this issue. I've got great faith in our athletic director, Eric Harper, and that he's working hard to close this deficit. We talked about some of the major kind of revenue sources that are out there, including some things related to the conference realignment, which will help close a significant amount of the gap that exists in the athletic budget. And some of these numbers, he has been able to get updates, including the amount of donations received, which is reflected here in this report as being very low, but it's actually in the multi-million dollar range. It's already up about $3 million for this year, and a lot of indications that we're going to close the year strong in fundraising. And so Casey Wyman, Eric Harper, and I, and the CFO for athletics will be working closely on a weekly basis to monitor these numbers and to make sure that we are going to come to a good conclusion of this year and develop a sustainable plan for athletics going forward. And Athletic Director Harper can provide additional details if you'd like more clarification.
Mr. Chair, if I may, can you kind of give me a ballpark so we're going to cut it in half?
I'll let Harper take that question.
For the record, Eric Harper, Director of Athletics, UNLV. When you say cut it in half, are you talking about the $20 million? We would not be able to cut $20 million in half in one calendar year. But however, we are making a lot of progress as we move through our, officer in charge, Hebe mentioned the donor contributions that are moving on the rise right now. We're close to $3 million in revenues that were not, Workday is not a real-time product. So the numbers that I ran through the foundation yesterday shows us close to $3 million in donor contributions. Our ticketing number revenues are we budgeted 8.7, I'm sorry. We are 1.3 above that right now. So those numbers will help us over the course of the year. And then we've just recently received a couple of other emails on checks I have to go pick up. I don't want them to be mailed. I don't want them to get lost in the mail. So go pick up a couple of six-figure checks. And no disrespect to the U.S. Postal Service, but I'd rather go pick it up to ensure it gets to the right place. And then our multimedia rights partner, which is Learfield, their projected number is higher than what was originally put into the budget. So those are three areas right now that are moving in a positive direction. And we've got several who's who of Las Vegas that are committed to UNLV that will be keeping their names quiet, anonymous at this point in time, but they're continuing to make commitments to UNLV athletics.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And again, it sounds like, but we either got to pick it up here a couple of years out, getting it paid out.
Yeah. With my new CFO, I have a CFO that's only been on campus for about 5 months now, and he's got some procedures that we feel very strongly that will help us on projections, both revenues and expenses, that we'll be able to close the gap as quickly as we possibly can. The conference realignment piece with regards to Mountain West, Pac-12, or whatever we want to call that, is they're now, the two lawsuits that were going on are now in mitigation. So hopefully those will come to closure sooner than later, and then we'll have a better idea on what those revenues will be positive for us, as well as our friends up north in UNR.
Thank you.
Regent Brooks.
Thank you, Chair. Regent Brooks, for the record. Mr. Harper, I do have a couple of questions about some of the numbers on here, and I have to say, in my experience with having conversation with you, is that you are absolutely one of the most knowledgeable people that I've spoken to when it comes to how our athletics run on a campus. From that collegiate level, understanding some of the nuances of name, likeness, I really think you have you absolutely have it in terms of a great understanding and able to educate me a little bit on some of those things. So I greatly appreciate those conversations. The budget, I'm just having, there were a couple of things that I wanted to ask you about, and it's really okay if the question's being directed to you, but perhaps maybe it goes to the CFO or somebody else. I'm just not really sure. So on FY25 actual, I didn't know if where it says gift revenues, the 2,612, right, was that a data entry error, or where? Can you explain those numbers to me?
Okay. And the money goes obviously to the Eric Harper for the record, director of athletics. The funds go into the UNLV Foundation. And once they're at the UNLV Foundation, once processed, they have to be MTF'd over to athletics and put into a revenue line that comes up with into the Workday product. So that in itself, that's a timing deal more than anything. I myself, and my wife may kill me for this, I myself personally in the first two quarters had donated $5,000. And that was... Obviously, that's $5,000 more than the 2,612. So it's a timing deal and Workday is not real time. So it's difficult to. And my CFO for athletics is working on a project that I asked him to do that can show how the cash flows go from the foundation to athletics and then into the appropriate account that will be pulled for that number of donor contributions. And we can have that ready, I would say, at the June meeting. Is it June or May? The June meeting. He can have something ready to show how that flow goes, so it gives you a better idea of what it is.
Okay. That sounds I get that. I understand the timeliness of some of the software and implementation of things that we've got to be able to use. The some of the numbers just seemed a little bit off in terms of the projections and then the budget. And so I was wondering if you can just walk me through some of that in terms of why FY25 projections are at certain levels, but the budget is less than what some of those projections are. And so it seems like there would be there's something off in what's being projected and what's actually budgeted in terms of money on hand.
Is there a specific line on that, Regent Brooks?
Well, let's see. If we take a look at – even if we took a look at marketing, promotions, and royalties – right? So the projection spend is close to $4 million, but the budget spend is under $3 million. And so there's a big difference in terms of what those numbers are. And so I was just trying to understand, if you're budgeted for X amount of dollars to be spent, how could there be a projection of it being over $1 million more than what the budget is?
Taylor. I'm going to have my CFO, Taylor Covington.
Okay, thank you.
Hi, Taylor Covington, CFO, UNLV Athletics for the record. I believe, are you looking at the revenue line? Marketing, promotions, royalties. Royalties is a revenue line for us.
So I'll tell you exactly what I'm looking at is, let's see, page 2 of 7, up at the top, there's the FY25 projection and the FY25 budget. And just taking a glance at that, those numbers just seem to be off. And so that's why I was asking just for an explanation of the difference between what you're projecting and what you're actually budgeted for.
So on the FY25 budget for marketing, promotion, royalties, again, this is a revenue line. Originally, we had $2.875 million there, but as Director Harper mentioned earlier, our Learfield partners have exceeded that, and that's why our projection is $3.7 million.
Got it. So what the budget is and what the projection is, the difference is based on additional revenue that's that's actually come in, or is it revenue that's actually come in, or is it revenue that's projected to come in?
That's a good question. So on this one specifically, the way we work with Learfield is they sell our properties, our advertising space, and then we get a check twice a year from them. So we've already received one check for the year, so about half of that has already been claimed. The rest is it's a little bit of a blend of what they've already sold and what they already are collecting on for the remaining of the year, and then at the end of the fiscal year, we will be receiving that check. So this is a number that we can take to the bank.
Okay, that you're comfortable taking to the bank based on what you're projecting dollars will come in at from
yes,
from
according to our Learfield partners, that's what our projected payout from them is going to be.
Okay, and then just kind of like traveling down that right under operating expenditures, the cost for general operations and travel, those seem to move differently as well, right? So the projection for FY25 is roughly, let's just call it 26, 27 million, with the budget being a lot less than that.
Right. And
22 million. And so.
Right. And so for the FY25 budget, again, so the budget was built before I was here. So I don't want to, there's only a limited amount that I can speak to on that. But I will say when it comes to the budget, the goal for the budget this year is last year we had a very significant deficit, and the goal coming in was to figure out how we can reduce that deficit. And there were some targets on here that through just schedules and through, team travel schedules and as the actual costs come in, some of these budget reductions that we had seem to be a little too deep, and we're working with our campus partners to determine how to right size those budgets going forward and what our operational minimums are for the department so we can set better targets for the upcoming years. So for these projections, we're projecting what the actual costs are based on what we have actually experienced throughout the year from a travel standpoint, and we still have multiple sports that are in season and finishing up seasons. So that's with what they still have on the docket, that's kind of where those actuals are coming from.
So if we take a look at, let's just even travel, right, for FY24 actual, we'll call it $6.5 million, general operations, $23 million. But then those numbers seem to fluctuate a little bit, right, through the course of the next year for FY25. It increased pretty significantly even from FY23, what that spend was. So what would be the reason for this up and down, right, movement of budget and spend regarding operations and travel?
Yeah, so, what I can speak to, again, Taylor Covington, Athletic CFO for the record, what I can speak to is essentially what we're seeing in the travel space across the industry is that when it comes to travel, prices are continuing to rise. A plane ticket that was $100-$150, we're looking at the metrics, is now $200-$250. Hotels that were $100 are now $300. So we are fighting the continued inflation in the travel space. And what we're trying to do to help get those expenses under to minimize those expenses, and this is where planning for athletics is needs to be done well before the season starts, because you have schedules, and these schedules can't be adjusted. A lot of these schedules are determined years in advance. So if we have a team that is flying is scheduled to a less regional schedule, those expenses are going to be higher than they otherwise would be. And so to try to rein in those increased costs just in travel in general, what we're trying to do is move to a more regional scheduling model where we can for some of our sports to try to lower those mandatory costs and build a travel schedule that is more budget-friendly. As to what the budgets were in previous years, again, with not being around, I can't really speak to how those were
set. All right, Reader Brooks again for the record. So I'll give you a flyer on that one, right, because you're right. You hadn't been around, but I think there is some concern, though, obviously, in the numbers and in what the budgets are, what the projections are, and how things are flowing, particularly when we take, like, if I were to scroll down and read some of the other entries, particularly the $20 million, right, where there's going to be a – hopefully the plan is to be able to take care of a $20 million deficit through cuts. But what I didn't see in the budget report itself, or what I would consider to be annotated with anything, was the actual, like, the real plan on what some of this looks like in terms of really wrangling in some of these millions of dollars. I think the total deficit's like $28 million. Is that correct?
Eric Harper for the record. On the 28, that also includes the FSC, the Fertitta Football Complex.
Okay.
As some points of discussion in reducing this, obviously, as I mentioned before, the conference realignment numbers that will come in, the earliest that would be July of 26. That's the earliest that we would receive a check from the conference realignment changes with the Mountain West and the Pac-12. But like increased our ticket pricing for football at Allegiant Stadium, a 6% increase in our VIP area, a 4 to 5% increase in our individual ticket sales on a tiered dynamic approach. We've sold 7 new suites at Allegiant for this coming year, with 5 to 7 more conversations on sales right now, with an average of $20,000 per suite. And single pricing increase average on single game tickets, non-VIP, is roughly a 15% increase. And then a structured and standard approach to our fundraising efforts. And then multimedia rights partner Learfield is projecting, once again, a higher pay for us in the future. But I'm also going to go into negotiations with Learfield for an earlier discussion about re-upping with them with signing bonuses. And that initial discussion will happen next week during the Mountain West basketball tournament. And then we also have 2 things that came up through the NCAA, allowing football field naming sponsorship. So Learfield is working on that with us to get a naming on the field for our games only. And then also we have the agreement with Cox Pavilion has expired, and we're looking for a new partner on the Cox Pavilion building to change, and hopefully we can have that done. That will be a multi-year, anywhere between 5 to 7 years, of an agreement with a new sponsor for that building, where our women's basketball, who is currently on a four-peat for the regular season championship, and then also our volleyball team that plays in that facility too. And then through that, we also can market NFR, because NFR is here for 10 days, and that value of that property goes up based on the number of events that we have there. So those are some of the things that we will do. And then my last piece here, on the Fertitta Football Complex, we will be relaunching naming opportunities within that building. So the running backs room, linebackers room, tight ends room, defensive staff room, and those particular rooms to help with the deficit, the debt service that we have on the Fertitta Football Complex.
Regent Brooks, for the record, thank you. I appreciate that. And so it sounds like there are some things that you're already working on to put together some type of corrective action, right, for some of this. And then the question becomes, based on some of those things that you'd like to put together, how many of that actually comes to fruition to make a dent in the deficit, and then what's the long-term sustainability plan for UNLV Athletics as we move forward? And I think those would be some of the questions that I would have, like, what does this look like long-term? And perhaps it might be I'm not trying to create a new business item, but it might be great to have additional reporting from the athletics department in terms of what sustainable planning looks like.
Yes, Eric Harper for the record. To your question, Regent Brooks, and with my new CFO, he has experience outside of college athletics with analyzing and analysis of budgets and revenues projections. So I will be leaning on him heavily because he has experience outside of athletics, so it gives him a different lens that we will be utilizing. And he's already put in place several things and mechanisms to allow us to monitor and watch. And also from a standpoint, when we now, moving forward, when we project revenues, we will make sure that we're not having the expenses projected at the exact same amount so that we have a lower building in an opportunity to have increased net revenues each year.
Yeah, Regent Brooks, for the record, again, I appreciate that. That makes sense because it seems to me like there's, in some instances, there could be the spend that's occurring, right, but not necessarily the revenue that's being brought in to balance that out. And so then you have this concurrent overspend that continues to happen, and perhaps so listen, I appreciate your time, and it'll be great to get those future reports from you in terms of sustainability and long-term effect. Thank you.
Regent Goodman.
Thank you. First of all, you've done a great job, so I'm not trying to, this does not reflect on the work that you've done, and I'm very appreciative of everything you've done. I just have some questions. You know, $900,000, I don't know what under budgeted means. That's a kind of a fun term, not budgeted. Like, how did this happen where we have $900,000 under budgeted for Allegiant, you know, $727,000 under budgeted for conference payments? These things seem pretty. Are they regulated? Are they not? You know, like, why is there such a disparity there? A lot of these items.
Eric Harper, for the record, Director of Athletics, UNLV. On the $900,000 specifically, as the attendance went up, the cost of Allegiant goes up. So the number of people that are required that they require based on health safety. Because we opened the 200 level, the 300 level on two occasions this year at Allegiant Stadium for larger crowds, Boise State in particular, as well as Syracuse. So the costs go up there. Now, granted, we do go up with ticket sales because there's more people there. But at the same time, that is on that one in particular. And on the conference deal on the 700, not sure why that wasn't put in there, but that's an annual deal. That's an annual cost that we have. So. Why that was not in, I don't know. The previous CFO must have overlooked it, and I didn't catch it when I looked at the budget. So it goes on me. At the end of the day, it's my fault because I should catch that.
I understand. Let me ask you this: on the $20 million, I didn't see this here, and I apologize if I just missed it. But that's a big cut. How are you going to cut that from the budget? Because it specifically says you're cutting $20 million.
Some of that's going to be cut over time. It's an impossibility to cut $20 million in 1 year.
That's okay. Because, the way it's read, it sounds like you're cutting $20 million for fiscal 25. And
Chris Evie, officer in charge. And I'll just reiterate, first of all, my confidence in Eric Harper and the great work that he's done as our athletic director. And one of the things to just underline is, again, we expect about half or slightly more than half of that budget deficit to be paid for by the conference realignment settlement, which won't come for a little while. And then what we definitely want to make sure is that we sort of right-size. We do not want to damage our athletic performance or those teams. We want to make sure that we're making the levels of investment that will allow them to continue to have the success that they've enjoyed. And so it's one of the really partnerships that I'm excited about, working with Harper and the team on in the coming years, and make sure that we're sort of bringing that down in a reasonable way so that they can continue to be successful, that we're making enough investment to support our athletic programs and the success that they've had.
Thank you. And I guess this message is for the CFOs. $20 million is a lot of money. It's a big number, $20 million. And to have that kind of deficit is significant. I run my household, okay? you don't want to have that kind of debt. So I really think that as our CFOs, we've got to really be watching those dollars and making a better effort to not put forward a number like this and put the athletic department in such dire circumstances. I hate to lecture, but $20 million is a big number.
Understood, and thank you.
Any other questions from any regents on the committee? So I do have one question, and I could ask it later on, but it is, I think it comes up in our item number 7, but it references back to the athletics, that there's like, I think, $3.5 million payment that goes to athletics. And I just ask this from a clarifying point. Is that a standard thing that student funds go that way, or is that to cover the deficit that was incurred? I guess we can dig into it when we get to seven, but that's I thought I saw something of that nature.
Hello, Casey Lyman for the record, CFO of UNLV. So that portion is associated with our student fees, and so there are various aspects within our student fees. Our general improvement fund, there is an allocation to them as well as activities and programs. And so that portion goes into their normal operating budget, which is then planned for within that piece. So to answer your question directly, that does not directly go towards a deficit unless we end the year with a surplus, and then that'll be adjusted to there. But traditionally, we budget for that for various expenses.
So that is part of
their annual budget.
Yes. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, sir.
Okay. If there are no other questions, we'll move on to item number five. Fiscal year 2023-2024 capital improvement fee report, information only.
Thank you, Chair. Chris Fatone, CFO for the record. Item number five is the first of four new reports that are on your agenda. Item number five is an annual report providing information from the campuses on the uses of the capital improvement fee for fiscal year 24. These four reports are the kind of final step of some policy changes that we proposed and the board approved back in September of 23 as closure for recommendations that we received from the Legislative Council Bureau's audits of the system's self-supporting funds, which included the student fee, self-supporting student fees. So these reports are providing feedback to the board on the uses by the institutions to kind of provide that closure of the annual activity. So that you can have the opportunity to review the uses in alignment with the board's policies that specify those particular uses. So each of these, this report is capital improvement fee. The report includes the project level details for each of the campuses. We've included references to the board actions where board action was necessary under the policy within the report for you, and we included in each of these the actual handbook section that specifies the board's allowed uses. This report also, I would just note, was published with supplemental. After publishing, I realized that my office, we had compiled the report with a draft version of UNLV's report, so we corrected that with the final version when it was posted. That was on my office's error in compilation of the report, but just to make sure we're looking at the right copy on the supplemental if you have any questions, and I'll pause there.
Thank you. CFO Vitone, are there any questions from the committee members on this report? Okay, seeing none, we'll move on to item number six. The fiscal year 2023-2024 general improvement fee report, information only. CFO Vitone.
Thank you, Chris Fatone, for the record. Item six, same backstory on the report. This is the general improvement fee. And again, so this fee, like the capital improvement fee, these are allocations from the registration fees that all students are paying when they're for their course registrations. And so this is the general improvement fee portion. And here you have reports from the campuses on the various program uses and allocations that they've made throughout the year for the general improvement fee. And with that, I will pause for any questions.
Are there any questions from the committee regarding this item? Okay, we have a question from Regent Goodman.
I'd like to hear more about the multicultural center and the student union, the 4.5 million right there. If I could get a little bit more information on that one. No, on this one.
I think that's UNLV.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hello, Casey Wyman for the record, UNLV CFO. So we earmarked those resources to allow our student affairs team to work through a renovation of the student union. We have previously talked about this and discussed it. However, it wasn't fully ready to communicate to the board as an action item. We plan to come back in June to seek specific authorization to use these funds for that. But this, due to the nature of the report as well as the timing of the report, we wanted to show that that is our intent. It's a little up in the air in the sense of how this will be included within the student union, as we're still developing the plans associated with the contractor, as there is a larger scope associated with it as well. But this was also part of the previous president's initiative, and so as we continue to bring on bring up to speed the officer in charge and develop those plans, we can continue to assess those. So are you looking for specifics on what the intent of the organization is going to be, or if there's more financial questions, I'm happy to answer those as well.
Where did that money come from, the $4.5 million? Or where is it going to come from?
It's from the student fees. The general improvement fee is the report that you're looking at right now. So that is a portion of the student fee that comes in. Again, sorry for the record, Casey Wyman. So as that comes in, there's an allocation across, and it's centrally managed. And so then we allocate it out based on impact to students. And so the threshold and the test that we often ask when we're looking for resourcing for good ideas or concepts is the impact to all students, or is this a more focused area? And then if it's impact to all, then we use general. If it's more focused, then we look for other revenue sources.
Is there a vote on campus for this kind of stuff? Like, do the students say, I want to use, you know, I want to pay, you know, this kind of money, which is appropriate if they do?
Hi, Chris Evie, officer in charge for the record. So just to back up a little bit, this is, I would say, you know, one of these situations where we're in a reverse order of how things should be happening, because it's included on this report when it hasn't actually gotten board approval, and it would need board approval for this to go forward. And this was a decision made by my predecessor. We won't be building a multicultural center with these funds. We are looking to do a student union renovation, and that would benefit all the students. There's not enough meeting space for students, and we're looking to create a meeting space that would be available to all students for student engagement, generally all student clubs, etc. But that item will come before the board for consideration before any final allocations are made. So it's consider that sort of, it's a decision, you know, they put it in pencil, President Whitfield put it in pencil so that they could try to advance those plans, but we'll be coming back to discuss that before we move forward.
Thank you so much for the clarification.
Thanks. Regent Boylan.
Thanks, Chair. She kind of got my question answered, but a multicultural center in a student union, what?
It's not legal.
I know it's not, but why did we need it, or why was it there? Because when you go into a student union, everybody is multicultural. Why do we have to have a separate space and try to say, oh, we are doing something special and we are separating? Because we're all the same. We're all students here. So this is the first time I've heard of this, that there was something called a multi-culti, whatever it's called. So what was that, or is?
Thank you. Chris Evie, officer in charge for the record. This was an initiative that my predecessor had contemplated related to a student union renovation. And again, it's not something that is going to unfold in a way that there will be something called a multicultural center within the student union.
So there's nothing like that there, and there won't be one either?
There is not currently a multicultural center, and we're not talking about, we're not currently planning on building one.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And
we are looking at creating more student engagement space in the student union to support all student clubs and activities.
There you go. That's much better. Thank you, and congratulations on your new post.
Thank you.
Outstanding. Thank you, Chair.
Are there any other questions from the committee on this item? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 7, fiscal year 2023-2024 activities and a program fee report, information only, and CFO Vitone.
Thank you, Chris Vitone, for the record. Item number seven is the activities and programs fee annual report for fiscal year 24. Like the two reports we just covered, this is a component of of the registration fee that's set aside for activities and programs. I've included in there the handbook policy section that describes the uses, and the report is provided by each institution on how they've the program allocations for their activities and programs portion of their fees throughout the year. And again, with that, I'll pause in case you have any questions.
Regent Goodman.
Is this the fee where speakers are paid for, like that might come to campus? Sorry, officer in charge, Heavey.
Chris Heavey, for the record. I don't think that's a common use of the fee. Speakers are paid for from many different sources, often gift funds that the campuses have. I think that would be a more common source. Yeah, the Barrick Lecture Series, the Forum Lecture Series, most of those are funded by gift funds or discretionary funds within the colleges. But I can't say for sure. Elise Bunkowski is here, way in the back, if she might have a more specific, detailed answer, but I don't think it would be common.
I have a specific question. So we have the College of Liberal Arts bringing in a speaker tonight. Mm-hmm. Would the College of Liberal Arts get money from this fund to bring in that speaker?
No, they would not.
Okay, where would that money come from then?
I believe they use, I used to be the dean of the College of Liberal Arts, and that's a long-standing speaker series. I believe they use their discretionary funds that they earn from summer school returns. Summer school programs are self-supporting and generate returns that support, like, faculty development and other kinds of things. And so I think they use a portion of those funds to support their speaker series.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Are there any other questions from members of the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 8. Fiscal year 2023-2024 gift funds information only. CFO Vitone.
Thank you, Chris Vitone, for the record. Item number 8 is the last of our new reports that's follow-up or closure to the audit recommendations from the Legislative Council Bureau audits. This one was the result of the audits of the foundation activity, and their recommendation that that came out of that work was they'd observed some instances of the institutions having some gift fund accounts that had idle activity or lacked activity over a period of several years. And so our policy update obligates the campuses to review their accounts on an annual basis and provide information about their intended closure or resolution of those stale balances. That was the origin of this report. In other discussions in reviewing both the state-supported state budget actual report and the self-supporting budget actual reports, we also noted in those reports that we're not reporting the annual gift activity. And so rather than there was some discussion at the business officers level about making adjustments to the self-supporting budgets, but a lot of gift accounts are not budgeted. The board policy doesn't require that, and often the scholarship uses don't lend themselves to being budgeted in that way. So rather than adjusting the self-supporting budget report, we did offer in this report a summary of annual activity in the gift accounts for all the institutions. So this report is a combination of their annual gift activity and also their review of their stale gift balances with their reported resolution of those balances. So with that, I'll stop for questions.
Are there any questions from the committee? Seeing none, we will move on to item number 9. University 2015A University Revenue Bond Refunding Resolution for possible action. CFO Vitone.
Thank you, Chair. Chris Vitone, for the record. Item number 9 is a request for an approval of a resolution to refund the 2015A University Revenue Bonds. These bonds actually refunded earlier 2005 issuance that funded projects on both UNR and UNLV's campuses. and this is an opportunity to refund some outstanding principal on the 2015 A bonds for interest savings that will benefit the projects on those campuses.
Okay. Are there any questions about this item? No? Anyone like to make a motion?
Motion to approve.
Is there a second? Second. Okay. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I vote aye as well. Opposed, say nay. Motion passes. Thank you. Item number 10, financing of the UNLV Transit Center parking structure resolution. UNLV.
Chris Seavey, officer in charge. Thank you. As we know, college campuses are vibrant places where we bring together thousands of students every day to learn and to participate in activities, and one of the biggest challenges we have as a growing campus is parking. This is a request to approve, allow us to move forward with issuing bonds to build a new parking garage for up to $62.2 million in the southeast corner of our campus by the In-N-Out Burger. It's a project that's long been contemplated, and though it does not have universal support, as you know heard today, we do believe it's timely, as that parking is often very challenging on campus and in that area, especially when we do have events. And you know, I'll mention that those events at the Thomas and Mack Center are vital to funding our athletic programs, and so we don't want to curtail the ability to use the Thomas and Mack Center as a revenue generating or for athletic events. And so this additional parking will really help students. We have had extensive consultation with the students about it. It would come with a fee increase in future years. And we have the presidents of CSUN and GPSA here who will be happy to talk with you about their organization's support of us moving forward with this parking garage at this time. It's also, just last comment would be that, you know, it's one of these issues that if you wait until it's too late, you have several years in which you wish you had done this kind of thing. The future is always a little uncertain, but we have been continuing to grow at UNLV, and I'm very bullish on the future of the institution as an anchor institution of Southern Nevada, which we know is a vibrant community. And so I think this parking resource will really serve us well in the long run. And if you'd like to hear from the student leaders, they'd be happy to comment, but I'll leave that up to you. Well,
thank you. I know
you're always happy to hear from student leaders, so we'll let them comment briefly. Okay. That's okay.
Hi, Regent. Teresa Marie for the record, GPSA student body president. Alistair is on his way back. So this is true. They did come to GPSA. But prior to that, I think I had three or four meetings as president, and I did grill our CFO, and he's laughing because I did, as well as Mike Lawrence and the other individuals who were involved in this project. And then I brought it to our council and our executive board, and they did vote on it. So our students were involved in this process. I was in at least 6 hours of meeting prior to it being brought to our council, and they did support it. We do recognize the cost of this, but also I am a student in the Greens Fund building, and I have been for approximately 12 years off and on as I have left, got a number of degrees and came back. And I didn't initially agree with this, but having been back on campus for 3 years and having been in that building, I realize safety-wise that parking garage is going to benefit a lot of students who are between the student union, Greens Fund, architecture building, as well as having more parking rather than trying to cross Maryland Parkway into Gateway sometimes, especially at night. And I know I was on campus until 3 a.m. With working on my degree. So I do think that this is something that it will benefit our students. And I will yield my time to Alistair.
Hey, everyone. President Dias for the record. Sorry, I'm out of breath. Can't run in these shoes. but I just wanted to say that we at CSUN had a presentation about this, and we were able to see the fee structure, how it worked. Deep breath again. And they came by, and they broke it down for us. It was very clear, and a lot of us in CSUN liked it, and we supported it, and so we wanted to bring that to your attention today.
I guess I'll start by, whatever it was, a year ago that when this was brought forward and we wanted more information, but the proposed fee increase was implemented even though we didn't approve it. And it's, I don't know, that was a little bit of a surprise to me that, why even ask? You're just going to raise fees anyway. So I'm not directing it to you directly. I'm just saying that the school increased student fees without a structure. So I don't know. I'd like to get some other insurances or some other guarantees. I mean, something that it's not going to just go rampant into some exponential increase.
Yes, Chris Evey, officer in charge for the record. And I'll say that, you know, parking is a self-supported unit. And so ultimately, you know, we have built other parking structures as well. And so we are keeping the fees just in alignment with the expenses. And as is shown in the report that we provided to you, our parking fees are less than most other similarly situated institutions, including, you know, substantially less than what is charged to students at UNR. So we will promise that we will keep those fees in alignment with the costs. Not to be hard on Dave, when we go to the Regents meeting, that's a beautiful parking garage that we park in up in Reno. I love that garage. It's so close to their buildings. And this would, you know, be similarly situated for key events where we'd have much better parking for those events. So I'll just say that I understand that it gave a sort of a negative appearance to have that increase, but that increase went to just cover the cost of parking. It didn't go anywhere else. And, you know, we are still paying down some of these other parking garages. And so we will always keep those costs in alignment with the fees in alignment with the costs.
So not to be argumentative, but if we had approved that the garage last year with the fees that they did receive anyway, then would there be an additional fee increase beyond that for the students for parking?
I think the reality is, yes, there would have been the additional fee increase because essentially we're balancing two sides of a ledger, and that that additional revenue is just calculating into the debts that needs to be paid for the self-supporting function.
Okay, and if one more question. If we didn't approve this today, would they see the fee increase anyway after this time?
No, I think if you don't approve it today, we will hold off on that fee increase.
Okay.
And Mike Lawrence here is our associate vice president who oversees parking. He can ask more specific questions. But no, if you don't approve this, I think we will not do the fee increase.
Okay. Thank you. Regent Brooks?
Thank you, Chair. I was really just piggybacking off some of the questions that you had. I was thinking for a moment of asking about costs associated with this parking garage versus the one up north, but I'm going to stay away from what the actual costs are to do that. What I was wondering though is the way that we understand it is there was a fee increase already delivered for students that specifically was for the structure of this garage. And so the question then is, since that already happened, you're not asking for an additional fee increase at this time to move the project forward, correct? You're just using the last fee increase is the only fee increase specific to the build-out of the parking structure.
Chris Evey, officer in charge for the record. I wish I could say yes to that question, but as Chair Downs noted with his head shake, the answer is no. There would be an additional fee increase that would be associated with that. And ultimately, the answer, I think, is that the last fee increase would not have been sufficient. And we don't just technically, these are not student fees. And so this doesn't typically flow through the board, the changes in parking fees. We're not actually asking for a fee increase today, but we are telling you that fee increase would happen.
I appreciate the nuance of that. I really do. The question regarding the student fee increase, right, is the one that's sticking with some of us the most, right? At least for me it is, considering the other conversations that we've had over the course of the last several months regarding student fee increases. So the question would be then, for your clarification of the student fee increase, where is that increase being placed? So a student is paying for what, and that particular thing is now going to be increased to cover the parking structure?
Yeah. So it's not a student fee.
If it's okay, Chris Pitone, for clarification, I think the parking being a self-supporting program and these being parking fees, they are being segregated from the other fees that you do see in student fees. So like student fees that are segregated for the specific purposes they're approved for, the parking permit rates and any other parking charge is segregated from all those other revenues and managed specifically for the parking program that does not receive revenue from any of those other sources. So parking isn't receiving any general student fee or any portion of registration fees. They are generating their revenue from the parking permit sales and other activity, and that revenue is segregated specific to the parking program. So users of parking are paying for parking, and it's not commingled with those other revenues.
Okay.
If that helps.
Yeah, it does help. Thank you. Regent Brooks, again, for the record, thank you. I appreciate that answer, and now I've got some more clarity on this. Thanks.
Thank you.
Regent Boylan?
Oh, actually, she can go ahead, Regent Goodman, yeah? Go ahead.
Regent Goodman.
Thanks. Okay. So, I can appreciate where you're coming from. My question is, you know, we're going to have an item coming up. We're losing several hundred parking spaces to the county for that, you know, what we're doing with that under kind of pass. And I just, you know, I'm just putting this on the record. We need to start thinking about things of, you know, I realize the county spent a lot of extra money to go downward, and I appreciate that. But, you know, we lost spaces there. So, hey, county, help us out with our new parking garage. I mean, it's things like this that I think we really need to try to ask for more. And when we go into these kinds of situations, we're losing 6 acres. I understand it costs more, and they worked with us to make it go under. But at the same time, here we're going to be passing this on to our students. And it's these kinds of things that I think we need to do moving forward where, you know, we recognize that we're going to have to spend more money. So when we're sitting at the table with these varied entities, we should ask for more. So, you know, this is just me pontificating, but I just wanted to put it on the record. Thank you.
Chris Evie, I will just say amen.
Regent Boylan?
Thank you, Chair. I like your attitude. It was like, screw you, board. We're doing it anyway. So we've got the consigliere here. Maybe he can help me with this. Do all student fee increases have to go through the board?
Yeah, Chrissy, for the record,
yes,
all student fee increases that are above $50 have to go through the board. Presidents have the authority to authorized fees below, student fees below $50. But again, we want to make it clear, this isn't a student fee because students are not required to pay it, right? This is only what you pay if you want to have a parking space. And it's worth, ability to park in campus. It's worth noting that we also, you know, support, for example, the transit center, which would be right next to this, which would allow students, you know, access for, to the campus via mass transportation, buses, et cetera, and we want to support other ways when students who don't have cars. This is the voluntary, you know, privilege of having the opportunity to have a parking space.
Oh, that sounds great. I know that area well, and it does need a parking garage there. But, like the questions were brought up, could the county help us? You know, when students go in there, they have $5 for their lunch. Maybe it's 10 now. And now they'll have to pay $5 to park there and go, you know. That means they don't get their Coke. They just get the fries or something for $10. So we are making it difficult for the students, is my point. The students still pay. Why does it have to be so much? I know it's just a few dollars, but when students are hungry, then every dollar counts. Can we lessen the amount or?
Well, as Chris Heavey for the record, as we've noted, this is a self-supporting function. And so we believe that the fees will ultimately over time cover the costs, increased costs of the parking. And, you know, one of the things I'll just note as a piece of context, I graduated from UCLA. UCLA is the same size as UNLV in terms of square footage. You pay for parking, you would pay thousands per year if you were lucky enough to be able to get a parking space at UCLA.
See, that's the problem. All of you guys from California, you need to go back. You bring all this expensive stuff and say that to us.
I've lived here much longer than California, so I'll just say in my defense.
I'm just busting. Yeah. Yeah, I'm just being friendly with you because you're new, being the president in charge. Okay. Yeah. And I like that. But don't tell us it's more expensive in Reno and it's more expensive in L.A. because I hear that all the time. In L.A., it's like this. I'm like, go back to L.A. We are a bad place. So to say that just because it's not as expensive as them, then it's all right. Can't we get any money from anywhere, a grant or from, I don't know, I'm always after trying to doge the system. Maybe we need to have somebody, doge to come in and find us the money and say, okay, yeah, don't charge the students, because I love the students. I was a poor student.
Well, Chris Heavey, for the record, we certainly want to do everything that we can to support our students and keep things affordable.
Oh, yeah, sure.
We do, for example, have a food pantry. We have basic needs. We have many other ways that maybe getting a little off this topic that we try to support students' needs when they have, difficulties with those kinds of issues.
Okay.
You know, ultimately, in a campus with a fairly small footprint and a high enrollment, surface parking is a very inefficient use of our acreage. And so this is a way of being more efficient in how we use land to support goals for enrollment growth. And it will allow greater opportunities for parking in key areas, including, for Board of Regents meetings when we host them in our student union, which, when that happens now, that's a big inconvenience to the campus because it takes up that lot, which is very heavily utilized every day. This will make things, much easier in that part of campus.
No, I agree with it should be built. I'm just saying, can we find money from somewhere else? But it's a great thing. I would love to see it there. I'm in favor of the building of the parking lot. Just not so much in taking $2 from a student or something. But, it has to be done. Thank you so much.
Are there any other questions? Regent Gokuchiya.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Regent Gokuchiya, for the record. I think it's fairly simple. You got $62 million. I'm more concerned whether you can build it today for $62 million, and hold those costs the way stuff is escalating. But clearly, 1,250 spaces over 20-year life of the garage, it will recover it with these fees. And again, it's staff, students, and then I assume if there is an event at the Thomas Mack or wherever, then in fact you can open it up to the public and generate more fees, correct? It's all about a fiddle pencil, and I'd be more concerned about the estimate of $62 million getting it built.
Mr. Wixon?
Thank you, Chair Downs. Just for the record, I think we need to clarify one point, and I know the financial consultants are here, but I do quite a lot of bond financing, and for these projects to go out into the market, they have to establish revenue source, and one of the revenue sources that they have to establish is a student fee. And so if they didn't have the student fee, it would be almost impossible to market the bonds. And I understand, and I'm certainly not advocating one way or another. I just want you to understand from my perspective, and when I work on these financing projects, there has to be an income stream to help support the bonds. Now, part of the income stream would be the projected parking uses, but by using the student fee as an income stream, they're able to underwrite and the overall project and thereby reduce the interest rate. And so, yeah, but the revenue's there, and so it could be that the parking revenues would exceed what's needed, but we don't know. But without having some sort of fee stream in addition to the projected parking revenue, they could do the project, but it would increase the overall interest rate and the cost of the project.
Thank you. Were there any other questions from the committee? So I have an observation, and not coming to UNR's defense here, but you quoted UNR's Silver Zone parking fees, and that are the more expensive. There's also the Tan Zone at 404 for the year, Green Zone 310, the Blue One Zone for 168, the evening fees 163. So I mean, there's other fees, other parking. I remember when I worked there, I was so excited to get my Silver 8 parking. But before I had that, I had another parking space that was cheaper. So, yeah, I do get that. Their top-tier parking space is at 539, but there are cheaper options.
Yeah. Chris Hebe, for the record, Mike Lawrence informs me that that's what it costs to park in a garage at UNR. And that's what we were comparing to. We also do have a free parking lot, which is worth noting that there's no fee associated with it. That has 400 free parking spaces every day.
Is that in danger? Is that some of the parking spaces being slated to be taken away?
No, it's on the other side of campus by the women's softball field.
Okay, thank you.
So it's only 3 months.
So are there any other questions from the board or the committee? Is there a motion?
Wow. Reacher Brooks for the record, everybody. I'll jump in and make a motion to approve.
Second.
Okay. We have a motion to approve and a second. Any further discussion?
I will second that.
We have the second from Regent Goodman. So call for the vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I vote aye as well. All opposed, say nay. And motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Moving on to item number 11, Aloha Pacific Retail Lease Agreement for 900 square feet in UNLV Student Services Complex Building C. Officer in Charge Hebe.
Yes, thank you, Chris Hebe, for the record. This is a great project and partnership that we have with Aloha Pacific. Our only bank on campus closed about a year ago, and now we're looking to have a new bank, and President Whitfield and started the Financial Literacy Center that's been really spearheaded by Kate Corrigan and Barb Roberts, and they've put out an RFP for someone to come in and open basically a student-run credit union on campus. And Aloha Pacific responded to that, and we're asking for approval of a 5-year lease with the potential to renew for 5 more years if both parties agree. And they will contribute substantially to the campus to sponsor the Financial Literacy Center and employ students, and they will pay slightly above market rate for the space, and they will cover the costs of the remodel. And we just think this is a huge win for the campus, and we're excited to ask for your approval for this lease today.
Are there any questions from the committee?
Yeah.
Regent Goodman.
I'm a little wary of your RFPs, so I just have to ask, how many people responded to this RFP, or how many banks do you know?
I believe Aloha Pacific was the only group that responded. They definitely contacted banks specifically, and U.S. Bank was the prior bank on campus, and I know that they reached out to them. I believe Kate Corrigan is in ARSA, and she ran the RFP, but I know they did active outreach. I understand your concern, but I do know in that process they did active outreach to other banks to make sure they were aware of the opportunity.
Great. Thank you.
Quick questions.
Regent Boylan?
Yes, sir. Do we know why, or should we know why, or do we want to know why the U.S. Bank left that place?
Their lease expired, and we d- didn't renew it, and
why?
It was related to the plan that President Whitfield and Vice President for Student Affairs Keith Rogers were working on for a remodel of the student union generally. It's valuable space, and they want to have that space for student engagement, and so they did not want to commit that space for another long-term lease to the bank, so they just let the lease expire.
So can we reach out to them again and ask them to come there?
We don't have the space.
No. Besides the other one that you said, the other bank said.
They did make sure that U.S. Bank was aware of the opportunity for this RFP. It's in a different location. It's not in the student union. So, and okay, Wells Fargo as well they reached out to. Yeah, so, but, so.
U.S. Bank doesn't want to come back. They don't like.
They didn't bid on this RFP. It's in a different location. And this the focus here is a student-run activity.
I see.
There was different parameters for how it will work. And Aloha Pacific was very enthusiastic and came to the table with, you know, what we consider really an extraordinary deal of sponsorship and, again, paying above market.
And it helps the students to learn all this banking and stuff.
Exactly.
I mean, that's a great – I love that part. Yeah. I just like Regent Goodman said, I'm always concerned about the RFPs because we don't never seem to have a, you know, people responding enough. We get an RFP and one person, one bank responds. And that's kind of, you know, dodgy to me. It's like, whoa, what are you doing? So, but I get this. Thank you so much, sir.
Thank you.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve? We have a motion from Regent Goguchia. Is there a second to the motion?
I'll second it.
We have a second from Regent Boylan. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I vote aye as well. All opposed say nay. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Number 12, land gift to DRI from Boulder City, Nevada.
Good afternoon. Kimura Acharya, President of DRI. DRI is Assistant Vice President for Campus Planning and Facilities. Peter Ross will present the item.
Thank you.
Good morning. Peter Ross, Assistant Vice President for Real Estate and Capital Planning for the record. At your November 30, 2023 regular meeting, the Board of Regents voted to approve accepting a gift from the City of Boulder City of a 0.65-acre vacant parcel that abuts the east edge of our Boulder City facility. And as a reminder, DRI has 3 acres of land with a building on it in Boulder City. Included in the board packet was a land conveyance agreement that was also approved by the board at that meeting. Working with the city after the board's approval, we discovered that the zoning for this new parcel wasn't appropriate for the transfer to the university. So we worked with the city over the time period since you voted to approve, and we corrected that. With that fixed, the Boulder City Council moved to finalize the agreement, and in that process, some minor modifications were made. We note that the intent and the general terms of the agreement are the same as those that you approved. However, given the number of modifications, we wanted to bring this back to the board to make sure that you were looped in for exactly the terms that the land was being provided to ENSHE. So the revised agreement is in the packet. The changes that were made are noted in the briefing paper. Probably the most substantive one is an inclusion of a 15-foot height restriction on just that gifted parcel. This doesn't apply to the 3 acres that DRI already had. This is consistent with good planning practice since it abuts residential neighbors to our property. And so, and it also doesn't conflict with any uses that DRI has or may have for that land in the future. So we had no objections to that. And again, there were some other minor changes made to the agreement that are noted in your packet. With that said, on behalf of DRI, we ask that the board approve the revised land conveyance agreement And to facilitate the transfer, we further request that the Chancellor be authorized to finalize, approve, and execute any and all documents that may be required to accept the land, including but not limited to the land conveyance agreement between the City of Boulder City, Nevada, and the Board of Regents, and a quick claim deed or other similar instrument as may be needed. All the aforementioned documents and or agreements have been reviewed and approved by the ANCHI Special Counsel for Real Property. And finally, we wish to once again express our gratitude to the City of Boulder City for this land gift. And we're happy to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you.
Are there any questions from the committee members? Yes, Regent Goodman.
Motion to approve.
Second. We have a motion from Regent Goodman, a second from Regent Goicoechea for approval of this item. Are there any discussion points on this? Seeing none, we'll call for the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I vote aye as well. All opposed, say nay. Motion passes. Thank you.
Thank you.
Congratulations. We've gone to number 13, purchase of real property located at 1125 Nevada State Drive, Henderson, Nevada, and two connecting parking lots. NSU, possible action. President Pollard.
Good morning, Regent Downs, Chair, and members of this committee. Just a couple observations. I've had the opportunity, I hope, to have kept you briefed on this particular purchase. Approximately a year ago, the institution was able to refinance a number of bonds that we had for our RSC building, where we were just at a little while ago, and then our KAB building, where we have our College of Nursing and other programs in. In that process, we were then able to approach the City of Henderson to acquire the building that we currently have, that being our Dawson building, where we have been in that facility since 2001. We're seeking to use the bond refinance, or rather our plan is to use the bond refinancing savings in a similar purpose for a capital project to acquire this building. This will allow us to secure the approximately $4.1 million that we've made in improvements in the building over the last 20 years. This obviously plays historical value for us as an institution. We've been there. That's where the original facilities were for the campus. But most importantly, it allows us to maintain a much-needed classroom and office space that we have. And then finally, it's a good investment for us as an institution. The appraised value of this first appraisal was $5.7 million. The second was $6.5 million. The purchase price is $2.9 million. Recognizing that the City of Henderson has the ability to sell real estate property to another public or non-private facility for the cost of the acquisition. They have been wonderful partners with us. They recognize the value proposition, and we're very excited to bring this to you. We will hopefully have this building completely paid for by July of 2027 based on the annual savings from the bond refinancing. And I'm happy to respond to questions that you all may have.
Thank you. We have a question from Regent Boylan.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Dr. Pollard. And this is a great deal. I realize that. But I have a question about history.
Yes, sir.
Is that the building? And I see the Chancellor is here. Is that where the vitamin factory used to be?
Yes, sir.
It was there.
Yes.
See, I've been here a long time. I know a few things. So that's great. I mean, it's history, and I see she's got up to tell us. She's agreeing also. So I believe you. So
thank you. I'm glad you know it. Thank you.
I think this is a great deal, especially if, you know, all the money you've spent on it and blah, blah, blah. So thank you for getting it through.
Thank you, sir.
Yes, ma'am.
Are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve?
I'll make the motion to approve since I've said the most.
I'll second it.
We have a motion to approve from Regent Boylan, a second from Regent Goodman. Are there any further discussion? Seeing none, I'll call for the vote. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All I vote aye as well. All opposed say nay. Seeing none, the motion passes.
Thank you.
Thank you. Number 14, Matthewson University Gateway Hotel Conference Center. Update UNR, President Sandoval. The other gateway.
Yeah. Thank you, Chair Downs, Vice Chair Boylan, members of the committee. For the record, Brian Sandoval, President of the University of Nevada, Reno. Before I get into my remarks on this agenda item, I did want to thank you all for agenda item 9, which was that bond savings. That's about $1.5 million to us incrementally, and it'll have a savings for our Joe Crowley Student Union as well as athletics. So even though it's a small amount, it'll be very beneficial. So we're grateful for that. And I'm also happy to answer any questions with regarding to parking, if you like. I will say this is that, you know, in terms of monetizing those parking lots when we're not using them, we are going to earn some income from Hot August Nights. They're going to utilize our north parking lots. And they're also, the Reno Rodeo is going to be using our parking lots, and they're going to be paying us for that. So that is a good thing. I will say this, and I think it's important for this the board members to know, you know, certainly when we charge parking fees, that money exclusively goes into the parking budget. That is, as was mentioned, is a self-supporting budgets. And we don't make money on those things, and that the money for those goes specifically to service the bonds as well as pay salaries and benefits for the employees. So one of the reasons we did have a slight increase in our parking fees, but that had to do with the 23% COLA. And so when there is a cost of living adjustment of that magnitude, there's no way to absorb it except to slightly increase those parking fees to help pay for that. So I wanted to make sure I made you aware of that. But jumping to this agenda item, it is my privilege to provide you an update with regard to, I suppose, the Northern Gateway, the Mathewson University Gateway. And as you recall, this is not a new subject for this board, but this is such an important project that we think it's important to do this step by step. And so we're going to be providing you this informational item. There will be another more specific one at the next meeting, and then we're hoping to bring this for your consideration and approval at the June board meeting. But the Mathewson project does represent a cornerstone of our broader vision to connect the university with downtown Reno while catalyzing economic growth and fostering community engagement. And if you come to Reno and come to the campus and you see the business building that you all approved before, it is almost finished, and it is absolutely beautiful. It is on time and on budget. They've put the facing, the brick, and it truly has become a pride of Reno and Northern Nevada with its exposure. And the first piece to that project was a parking garage, and that was very important. On that southern end of campus, there was not an indoor parking facility. It's completely sold out. My colleague from UNLV, one of our challenges is we still have a waiting list for our parking. And so that parking garage is fully utilized, and if indeed the board is to approve the hotel complex, that hotel will pay for the parking spaces it uses in the parking garage. So they will not receive those for free. This University Gateway project was envisioned as a transformative initiative to foster a seamless connection again between the campus and downtown Reno. As you recall, there was an acquisition of 17 properties that laid the foundation for this development. The initial plans were presented to the board in December of 2021, emphasizing a phased development approach focused on parking infrastructure and academic facilities. And again, as you recall, Edgemore Infrastructure and Real Estate was selected in September 2022 as the master developer to lead the design build efforts. And as I mentioned, the finalization of the business building is the first realization of this big project. And I do want to say, and perhaps it's a little bragging, but I think you should know, in January 2025, that business building was named the Best Education and Higher Education Project at the P3 Awards for its innovative financing model and community impact. So again, I want to thank you all for your support. And this accolade underscores the unique structure and impact of this project as well as its commitment to innovation. Now moving on to the hotel, represents the next critical next phase in the development of the Mathewson University Gateway District. The facility will occupy approximately 1 acre within the district and is designed to meet a variety of needs for our campus. And again, to orient you all, North Virginia Street that goes right through campus and 9th Street off the freeway. So it'll be right there, the very first thing that you will see as you approach our campus. It will feature approximately 133 guest rooms, include meeting spaces for the university for fundraising efforts, meetings. There will be a full-service restaurant and a rooftop providing a unique event space. In your materials, there are some pictures that what we hope for it to look like, and I'm frankly very excited about it. And as you may, I guess you do know this, is when you come to Reno, you have to stay somewhere else. We think it's, and I'm not going to comment on those other places that you likely have to stay, but we're really excited about the prospect of being able to provide a first-class experience that's immediately on campus, along with when we have visiting dignitaries, visiting academics, visiting families, visiting parents, what have you. We'll be able to stay right on campus. The Hotel Conference Center will be financed primarily through tax-exempt bonds and a low-cost loan from the Nevada Infrastructure Bank. And again, this is will be a first for this, and we're very excited to take advantage of that because it lowers the cost of the project. Edgemoor and Tolls Development will establish a 501c3 special purpose entity to ensure effective management during the bond financing period. This entity will borrow funds through tax-exempt bonds in the Nevada Infrastructure Bank. It will lease land from the university. It will oversee construction in partnership with Edgemoor and Tolls Development Company. It will own the hotel during the bond finance period and partner with a national hotel operator post-construction for professional hotel management. And I'm as eager, assuming your approval, who that will be, but it will be a top-notch entity. The essential outcome of this project is that the revenues generated from the hotel operations after accounting for debt service and operating expenses will be directly allocated to support key university priorities, including funding for the College of Business Building and other critical academic initiatives. Importantly, this financial model ensures that NC bears no liability for bond or loan repayment while maximizing benefits to our institution. So in closing, the Matheson University Gateway Project exemplifies our commitment to bridging academic excellence within the community. And for us, it's perhaps the final piece to this Gateway project that we're extremely excited about. I want to thank Mr. Wixom. I know that there's been a lot of communication between our staff and you, and we want this to be seamless. But again, this is for information. Happy to answer any questions. We'll be providing more specifics before we come to the board for final approval. So, Mr. Chair, thank you for your time and attention. Happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, President Sandoval. So, one question I had is if this is something you would like the Regents to use when they have their meetings in Reno.
Yeah, you'll be paying for the business building then when you do.
Will it have a GSA rate?
Yes. No, certainly there'll be a rate structure, but yes. I mean,
okay.
But you still, an increment of that will be going to pay for the business building. But, you know, and I'm sorry to be flip. I mean, that's the beauty of this is that when visitors come to our campus, again, they're spread all over downtown Reno, and this is an opportunity to be in one place and have a quality experience that you couldn't otherwise have.
Any other questions from the committee? No questions? No. I do have one other question. You said this will finish off the Gateway project. Do you still have that space between the parking garage and was it University Way?
Yeah, and Mr. Chair, for the record, Brian Sandoval, you're absolutely correct. So there, that space between the parking garage and the business building is being used by Edgemoor and Clark Construction, you know, for their base of operations. And with the structure we have now, it will continue to be used for that purpose if you all approve the hotel. But that space, you know, is slated for, we are at the legislature and hopeful that a life sciences building, the planning and design money would be approved for that, and that is the site where that would go.
Oh,
so
okay.
I misspoke, and if, for the record, it doesn't completely finish the Gateway. We do have that one piece of or that one parcel between those two buildings.
Okay, I had an impression the life sciences is going to be up by the engineering building.
Well, it could.
Okay.
It could. And,
okay.
And again, you know, that'll be a good problem to have, Mr. Chair, if the legislature is to approve the planning and design money. And Regent Goguetia is very familiar with that process, having sat on the finance committees. But if the legislature approves a match for us to do the planning and design, we would look at both parcels,
okay,
or both locations.
Okay. Since there are no more, there is a question, Regent Boylan.
Thank you, Chair. President Sandoval, that's some good news if I'm hearing it correct. You're going to make this hotel, but it doesn't cost us anything.
It will. You will not be liable if there was a default. And Mr. Klinger can explain this more specifically, but the system and the university will not be liable if there was a default on those bond payments.
Okay, and then on top of that, we'll get the GSA discount. I don't know why he's asking, because he won't be using it. He lives there. So we get the discount rate, which is the GSA account. So one last question before Mr. Klinger comes on. Is there going to be a bar downstairs in the restaurant?
Well, if you look at the pictures,
I saw something that looked nice. Yeah, right? At the top?
It'll be at the top, and that's one of the things. It'll be one of the feature spaces in northern Nevada because it will face the Sierra Nevada Mountains in downtown
beautiful.
Reno.
I've seen that. It's beautiful. I'll be there. But, yeah, thank you.
We can have a soda up there.
Okay. Yeah. I know. That's good for taking the rust out of your tools, what I'm drinking, but beer makes you healthy. Yes, sir.
Mr. Chair, for the record, Andrew Klinger, University of Nevada, Reno, to Regent Boylan. So the university's contribution to this is the land. And as the president described, there is a separate 501c3 that's created, and that's the entity that will issue the debt and really has the liability to the bondholders. And through essentially the net income of the hotel operation, it's anticipated that that will cover all operating costs, debt service, and then actually return some funding to the university. So it will end up actually helping us pay for the business building. When this was originally presented to the board, it was anticipated that about $500,000 a year from the hotel would cover part of the sublease payment for the business building. And I actually think that number will be higher based on our current model.
See, I love to hear these kind of things. It's so, both of you, I mean, President Sandoval, too, good news. This is great, especially if you get some money back.
Yeah.
That's just outstanding. Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And then here are the pictures, Regent Boylan.
I've seen something nice, yes.
Yeah. Regent Goguetia.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just now, the land does ultimately transfer to the entity in the end, or does the university hold it?
The university,
it will always
belong to the university, yeah. As will the hotel.
Yeah.
Once it's paid off, the hotel would become the property of the university as well.
I don't know how you can beat that.
Any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, we'll move on to item number 15, Fieldhouse and Turf Field Project Update, UNR, information only.
Okay. Chair Downs, Vice Chair Boylan, members of the committee, for the record, Brian Sandoval, president of the University of Nevada, Reno. And again, this is something that we are bringing for information purposes. And as you recall, and I know that it is a sensitive issue, and we are grateful that you approved the student fee that would help pay for the cost of construction of this project. So this is an update for that. But it's just to remind you, you know, this is a project that has been envisioned for almost 30 years, I believe. And Athletic Director Remp could really provide the specific numbers, but there are approximately 130 universities across the country that are similar to us. And of those 130, all of them except for 12 have indoor facilities for their students and athletic teams. And of those 12, none of them are a cold weather university. We are the only cold weather university that does not have one. And if you've been in Reno at this time of year or in January, you know, the temperatures can be in single digits or in the teens, and our students who are involved in club sports are practicing outside. Our athletic teams are practicing outside. In fact, our football team was practicing in the snow the other day. And in the fall and late summer, when we have the wildfires and we have the smoke, it causes a lot of a situation where our athletic teams and our students can't even engage in practice or events because of that smoke. So this project is one that is really been something that we've needed for a very long time. The proposal includes a 72,000 square foot indoor multi-purpose field house featuring 110 yards of turf for practice and recreational use. The facility will include drop-down nets for baseball and softball training, storage areas, and a small lobby. Also, and you will see in your materials, there are two turf fields where the students engage in their intramural sports and our football team practices. That turf is beyond its useful life. It's over 10 years old, and in fact, it's so bad that some of the students, if they fall and scrape their knees, they're getting infections because of the condition of that turf. So it truly needs to, those need to be replaced as well. And that's what this fee is going to pay for, is this practice facility and those turfs. That fee will not cover 100% of the costs of this, so there will be some fundraising that will be accomplished through the athletic department to cover the full cost of those fees. We will know exactly what the costs are. I believe we are determining that right now, and I'm sure Athletic Director Remp can fill that in. But it will be a shared resource, and based on the studies that we have done, the students will have dramatically more time within that facility than the athletic teams. So I think that is a good thing. It'll be used by the ROTC. It will be used by the band. I guess it's twice as many hours in the facilities as the athletic teams. The space will also be available for campus events and community gatherings. It's approximately a $25 million project. And as I mentioned, about $5 to $7 million of that will be fundraised by the athletic department and others. So we are currently finalizing the designs for both the field house and the turf fields. I do want to make one correction in our submission. We had stated in our in the briefing paper that this would be done in two phases. It will have to be done in one phase. We were hopeful that we were going to be able to start the turf separately from the field house, but given, I guess, there's such a thing as a turf expert or something that has said that we can't do this the way we had hoped to do it. But again, we will bring in this. We will be seeking final approval from you all either next meeting or the June meeting. And pending your approval, we will begin construction this summer with an anticipated completion by summer of 2026. So, again, it is a huge win for our students to have the ability because, again, the climate is a little different up there. And, you know, I've walked by there in January and seen them with their – you could see their breath. It's so cold outside, and those students practicing outside. I've seen our softball team doing batting practice in 15, 20-degree weather. You know, it's just very, very important to us. But, again, here to answer any questions, but, again, update you on the progress of this very important facility. Thank you for your time and attention.
Are there any questions from the members of the committee? Thank you, President Sandoval.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So, and Mr. Chair, if I may, to take items 16 and 17 together, they're very similar, and it very simple is essentially what we are doing is substituting the name of the renowned entity from renown to, I believe, it's Hometown Health. It does not change the terms and conditions of either of those lease agreements.
Are there any questions from the committee regarding this item?
I believe these are action items,
yes.
Mr. Chair.
Is there a motion to approve, one or both?
I move. Go ahead. I'll second.
We have a motion from Regent Gugachia, second from Regent Goodman.
Just to clarify, does it approve both?
Yeah. To approve both. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
I vote aye as well. All opposed? Motion passes. Thank you. 16 and 17, and then we have 18, second amended lease agreement between UNR and the Davidson Academy of Reno, of Nevada UNR. Yeah. President Sandoval. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair Boylan, members of the committee. For the record, Brian Sandoval, president of the University of Nevada, Reno. I respectfully request the Board of Regents' approval for the second amendment to the lease agreement in the building located at the Nell. I'm looking at the wrong notes. This is for the Redfield campus, Mr. Chair. And as you recall, we have a long-term lease with the Davidson Academy. We're seeking approval of the second amended lease agreement between the university and Davidson. This agreement reflects a collaborative effort to update and refine the terms of our partnership, ensuring alignment with current operational standards and mutual benefit for both parties. The language has been revised to ensure that operating expenses, utilities, and other direct costs associated with the premises are paid by the academy to the university. As you recall, in the initial lease, the cost of the lease was $1 a year, and it will now be a little over $320,000 per year, which will cover 100% of the university's costs for utilities and maintenance. The updated lease stipulates that operations and maintenance payments will be calculated based on the gross square footage of the rental premises, including mechanical spaces. Both parties will confer in good faith to confirm the gross square footage within 60 days following approval of the effective date of the amended agreement. A new provision delegates authority from this board to the chancellor to execute amendments to the lease if both parties agree that the stated gross square footage is incorrect by no more than 20% of what is specified in this agreement. The academy retains its option to extend the lease term for up to an additional 20 years. This amendment introduces a new provision granting the university the right to terminate the lease as of December 2037, provided that at least 3 years prior notice is given. And again, Mr. Chair, happy to answer any questions. This has been a long negotiation, and we had to continue this matter from the December meeting, but we feel that we've come to a place that's fair to both parties.
Thank you. Just to clarify, I heard you mention Redfield campus, but this is on the main campus.
Yes, this is the main campus. I was looking at the wrong notes, yeah. Mr. Chair.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Are there any other questions from the committee? Seeing none, is there a motion to approve? We have a motion to approve from Regent Boylan.
Yes, sir.
We have a second from Regent Gokuchia. Any further discussion? I'll call for the vote. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
I vote aye as well. All opposed, say nay. Motion passes. Thank you. Okay, I think we're good. Any new business items? They're seeing none. I guess we will adjourn the meeting.
Public comment.
Sorry. Not adjourning. Well, thank you. Thank you. Okay. Maybe we get my public comment statement. Sorry about that. Okay. Is there any public comment here in Nevada State University? Seeing none. SCS, is there any public comment on the phone?
There are no callers for public comment at this time.
Thank you. Now, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good job.